and welcome to X-Men Unraveled. I'm your host, Noelle, and I follow the stories of the X-Men in chronological order. Before I get started, I have a couple of announcements. First, if you haven't yet listened to The Trial of Marvel Girl that came out last week on Grey Malkin Lane, please go add that to your podcast queues now. I got to join the episode and talk to some really smart, awesome people about Jean, and it was just so much fun. Jean can be a bit of a divisive character, but I really enjoyed spending time to read through her stories over the decades. And for those of you who struggle, like me, with how Jean is written and the role she plays in the section of comics I'm covering right now, it's a good reminder that she becomes so much more over the years. And of course, there was a conversation about the Phoenix, because how can you talk about Jean and not get into that whole thing as well? To prep for that episode, I finally read the newest Jean Grey series, which is written by Louise Simonson, and it was just beautiful, both in the story and visually. It hits on the biggest moments in Jean's life, and I honestly can't say enough about it. I did not expect to love it, but I absolutely do. So I would highly recommend that if you haven't read it as well. But go check out The Trial of Marvel Girl on Grey Malkin Lane as soon as you can. I also got to join the Marvel Plus podcast to talk about the movie The Marvels. I have definitely been a victim of MCU fatigue, and so I never made it to the theaters to watch the movie, but I saw it on Disney Plus at home before recording the episode, and I absolutely loved it. It was so much fun, and all the characters had such meaningful interactions and growth. Kamala Khan, who is apparently now a mutant, was just the best part of the show. She's so great. Her family is in it, just like in the Ms. Marvel series, and it was just a lot of fun. So go check out the episode on Marvel Plus, because I had such a great time talking about the movie. Today, I am covering the story of El Tigre from Uncanny X-Men numbers 25 and 26. It's a two-parter where the X-Men meet a treasure hunter who ends up becoming the avatar for the Mayan god Kukulkan. This is probably the best time to mention and just get out of the way that since this is a comic from the 60s, problematic depictions and descriptions of any non-white characters are unfortunately to be expected. I will make note here and there about places in the comic that are especially problematic, but I had to make sort of an editorial decision to stick to the story for the most part. There's not a real emphasis on presenting anything too historical in the issues, and to me, it felt more like a movie that takes inspiration from a certain time and place rather than anything deeper or more nefarious. If someone does a deep dive into depictions of Indigenous Americans or Latin American cultures generally in the comics, this would be a story worth a close examination. But I'm just trying to get through the Silver Age X-Men here, and that's enough of a task, so I will leave that to someone else to take on. So, with that caveat, and without further ado, let's get started. Uncanny X-Men number 25 is titled The Power and the Pendant. On the cover, we've got Cyclops, Beast, Angel, and Iceman facing off against a new villain with the tagline featuring the menace of El Tigre. But we can only see the back of the villain. He's got an orange costume with purple stripes and a large purple headdress. There are also some Latin American-inspired sculptures around the characters, which, in conjunction with the villain's name, give us a hint about the background of this character. The issue opens with the X-Men driving Jean back to Metro College after their battle with the Locust last issue, but they end up having to take a slight detour to save some orphans. They happen to pass by the Abercrombie Orphanage just as it goes up into flames, so they pull over, suit up, and save the children. And they're actually so early on the scene that no emergency crews have arrived. Working together, they manage to get all of the children out of the building to safety, and they even do have to rescue some from the roof. Once all the kids are safe, the X-Men leave as quickly as they arrived and just as the firemen pull up. And one of the firemen remarks that folks distrust them because they're mutants, yet they stop to help orphans in danger. So hopefully, in addition to doing a good deed, the X-Men get some good PR. Back in the car, Scott, who is an orphan himself, starts worrying about the kids now that their home has burned down. Luckily, Xavier knows that a new orphanage is currently under construction, and in a few weeks, it'll be ready. So we've got all the loose ends tied up, aside from where the orphans are going to live for the next few weeks. But I don't think the issue wants us to think too hard about that. When Jean arrives back at college, Ted Roberts is waiting outside like a puppy for her. And as the team drives away, Scott thinks to himself that he can't stop thinking about Jean and maybe he should leave the team altogether to get over her. Warren is also caught up in thoughts about Jean and is very obviously jealous of Ted. So he thinks to himself that there's more fish in the sea and maybe he just needs to do a little more fishing. The next panel changes scenes quite dramatically to a jungle in Central America in the fictional country of San Rico. We see three treasure hunters exploring the area with ruins and pyramids around them. The leader of the group is named Juan Miroz, and he is a gem hunter from San Rico. He constantly refers to himself in the third person as El Tigre, and I just can't. I'm calling him Juan from here on out. It's real big stop trying to make fetch happen vibes with his constant reminders about his nickname. There aren't even tigers native to the Americas, Juan. But Juan does have quite the outfit, a wide-brimmed hat, a matching brown scarf tied around his neck, and an unbuttoned purple shirt that he's tied at the waist, so it's open literally all the way down his chest. Then he's got matching purple pants and a holster and pistol. The other two men are apparently his hired servants, Ramon and Tolok. Ramon has a large black mustache, a sombrero, green jumpsuit, and green sandals. He may also be from San Rico, but it's not confirmed. Third man is Tolok, and Juan refers to him as quote-unquote Indian, so I believe we can safely assume that he's a member of a local indigenous group. He wears a brown tunic-type outfit, sandals, and the worst bowl cut you've ever seen in your life. Reading between the lines a bit too much, probably. I would guess Juan hired Ramon before leaving for his treasure hunt, and then hired Tolok nearby to assist as a local guide. Juan announces that they have located the hidden pyramid of the Mayan god Kukulkan. He orders Ramon and Tolok to set up camp and start digging because the Mayans were immensely wealthy and he wants their treasure ASAP. Shortly later, the three men uncover a buried chamber containing a giant pile of gold objects. Juan is ecstatic at the find, but Tolok warns him about an ancient curse on this lost treasure. But just like any good treasure hunting story, Juan ignores his guide's warning and starts digging through the trove of items. He finds a red goblet, and when he turns it over, a decent-sized golden item falls out. It's a pendant, but it appears to have been split in half and the other piece is missing. So Juan just places it in his shirt pocket and carries on with the rest of his discovery. By now, it's gotten dark, so Juan decides to call it a day and the three head back to their nearby camp. Juan heads off to sleep, but Ramon and Tolok aren't quite ready for bed yet. And they're not about to let Juan keep all of this treasure. So they grab a machete and a bunch of rope and sneak up on Juan, who they believe is sleeping. Unfortunately for them, Juan hears them approach, sits up, and shouts, "May you be entangled by your own ropes for such treachery against your betters." And suddenly, the rope that the two men are carrying starts moving on its own, wrapping around the attackers and tying them up. Juan does not know what's happening, but doesn't really care. He grabs the machete and tells Ramon and Tolok that if they swear obedience to him, he'll let them live. Both of them agree pretty quickly at this point, and Juan orders them to get back to digging. Despite their pledge of obedience, though, Juan must still be a little on edge because he doesn't go back to sleep. He starts stoking the fire, and the pendant he found falls out of his pocket. He picks it back up, and when it's in his hand, he's suddenly able to read all of the hieroglyphics on a nearby wall. and he learns that the pendant is one half of an amulet, which was carved from a magical stone. Whoever has both halves of the amulet will possess power without limit if he survives its dreaded curse, as it will give them the power of Kukulcan. In Mayan mythology, Kukulcan is a feathered serpent god, and he was known as a god of creation, as well as rain, wind, and storms. But because he exists in the pages of Marvel Comics, Kukulcan gets a separate origin story in Thor and Hercules Encyclopedia Mythologica. He's an immortal, superhuman being who resides in a pocket dimension called Upper World, and it overlaps with Chichen Itza in eastern Mexico. He and other beings like him were worshipped as gods by the Maya as early as 1800 BCE. And his legend says that Kukulcan was responsible for gathering the rest of the gods together in order to create humans out of maize flour. And his first appearance in Marvel Comics actually comes from the Nomura series in 1948. So he's been around a little bit in Marvel before he shows up here. But learning that the power of a god is within his reach, Juan Meroz isn't content to remain a regular old gem hunter anymore, and he's now determined to find the other half of the pendant. A few days later, back at the X mansion, everyone is just going about their day when Cerebro loudly alerts the team to a new threat. The X-Men arrive at the machine first, and they're waiting for Xavier when we get an odd scene. Xavier's walking down the stairs with his new machine that gives him the use of his legs when he trips and falls. Suddenly, two large metal tentacles come out of the wall and catch him. It's very odd looking. Xavier explains to the X-Men that he devised and built these just for such an emergency, and they're activated by his thought waves. I believe this is the last we will see of either of these two devices. The metal wall tentacles are a bit much. Scott carries Xavier back to his wheelchair, and the group goes over to Cerebro. They're waiting for it to project an image of whoever it's detecting, but all they see is a jumble of light and a very faint outline. When Warren asks Xavier if it's a mutant, Xavier explains that he isn't sure because sometimes Cerebro will react to conditions similar to mutation. Quite convenient and seemingly a huge flaw with Cerebro, which is designed specifically to detect mutants. I know it's for the plot, but this just really bothers me. Is it a mutant detecting machine? A general threat detecting machine? Because at this point, I'd say it's like 50-50 on actually alerting the team to mutants. But the team is able to learn that whoever the threat is, they've arrived in Manhattan. So Xavier dispatches the team to investigate. Scott, Warren, Hank, and Bobby make their way into the city and start searching for anything or anyone out of the ordinary. Of course, we know it's Juan Meroz and his pendant that have alerted Cerebro because he just arrived in the city with Ramon and Tolok by helicopter. All three of the men are wearing clothes that I guess the average American assumed people wear in Latin America in the 60s. Ramon has a terrible green and orange sombrero with a green suit, a red shawl over his shoulder. Tolok is still wearing the same tunic and sandals that he had at the pyramids. And Juan has a giant brown sombrero and a green cape or cloak that wraps all the way around him and covers from his shoulders to the top of his boots. They couldn't stand out more if they had tried. We learn that Juan has been able to use the pendant to determine that the other piece is somewhere in Manhattan, but he still has to track down its exact location. So the three men try to hail a taxi to get to a hotel, but every taxi that passes has passengers already. Juan is not the most patient of men, so he grabs the pendant and sends out a mental command to a passenger in a cab. The man starts complaining that it's too hot and immediately demands that the driver let him out. Juan then gets the driver's attention and the three are off. Bobby happens to see the men as they get in the taxi, but writes them off as just Latin American tourists. A few minutes later, Scott also spots the group as they arrive at a hotel and thinks that they have an atmosphere of impending danger about them, but talks himself out of it. After not finding any leads, the X-Men give up the search and regroup at their own hotel. A little while later, Scott decides to go downstairs and check the newspaper for any strange events that might be happening. But once again, he's chased away by a mob when a passerby accidentally bumps into him and knocks his glasses off. This continues to be an issue. Scott really needs to start using goggles or at the very least add a strap to his glasses because he's coming dangerously close to getting killed by a mob like every other issue. Not to mention almost hurting people around him, which is what he's terrified of doing. We really need some problem solving. Back at the hotel, the X-Men see a report on the news about a riot at a nearby nightclub. The report says that the club patrons were suddenly filled with an inexplicable frenzy and started brawling. And there's a surprisingly clear photo of three men who the report says were the only ones that didn't join in the brawl, but also ran off before the police could question them. Of course, it's Juan, Ramon, and Tolok. Apparently, Juan used the pendant to cause a scene and just sit back and enjoy it. Scott and Bobby both remember the men from seeing them earlier in the day, and just then, Xavier reaches out telepathically and confirms that one of the men is the one that alerted Cerebro. Xavier says that he's been making some adjustments to the machine, and it revealed Juan's identity and that he tracked him to the city museum. But when Xavier tried to read Juan's mind, Juan sensed him and was able to use the pendant's power to block him out. So, with that information, the X-Men suit up and make their way to the museum as well. When they arrive, they find a broken padlock and a door that's forced open, so they go in to investigate. And things turn very night at the museum at this point. Beast is attacked by a suit of armor before Ramon throws a rope with weighted ends at him and ties him up. Iceman is tripped on a wire stretched across a staircase, taking a pretty hard fall down into a wall and getting knocked out. And then Tolok shoots Angel with a blow dart tipped with some sort of knockout drug. And finally, Cyclops doesn't escape either. Juan places an armed security guard under his mental control and has the guard hold Cyclops at gunpoint. With the heroes out of the way, Juan is able to locate the other half of the pendant. He attaches the pieces together and then places it around his neck. And suddenly he is transformed with gold skin and a very dramatic outfit meant to look like the clothes of a powerful Mayan king. He announces, "The man called El Tigre is no more. In his place, the reincarnation of the mighty god Kukulkan." Uncanny X-Men number 26 has the unfortunate title Holocaust, and the cover shows Juan, now transformed into Kukulkan, attacking the X-Men with fire. The issue opens up with a quick recap, and then we see Xavier looking at a now high-definition image of Kukulkan that Cerebro projects. Apparently, the adjustments he made are quite an improvement. Cerebro's readings also show that Kukulkan's powers have grown exponentially from when it first detected Juan with half of the pendant. Back at the museum, Juan, as the reincarnation of Kukulkan, is now on a mission to restore the power of the Mayan civilization. Kukulkan is on his way out of the museum, but Cyclops is still held hostage by the armed security guard. The rest of the team is tied up or knocked out. Seeing an opportunity, Cyclops uses his power to shoot the gun, shattering it to pieces, and then racing over to Kukulkan to stop him. Unfortunately, when he shoots his optic beams at Kukulkan, it hits his pendant, and they're reflected back at him with double the force and knock him out as well. Ramon and Tolok have been watching all of this go down, but they still decide that they're going to go after their former employer in order to steal the pendant and sell it. They go to attack Kukulkan, but he backhands Ramon and then sends a blast of fiery energy that he says is from the sun itself and sends the two flying away. They do survive, but this is the last we'll see of the pair. Kukulkan then leaves through the roof of the building and creates a bubble of solar energy around himself, which allows him to fly. He looks a little bit like the witch in the bubble in The Wizard of Oz. But in his solar witch bubble, he makes his way all the way back to San Rico in order to revive his Mayan kingdom. Once Kukulkan gets away, the X-Men are forced to regroup and make their way back to the mansion. The next day, Xavier makes a call to Jean at Metro College to ask her to pick up some books about Mayan history from the library. She's a little upset that he didn't contact her telepathically and wonders if it's because he doesn't think of her as an X-Man anymore now that she's left the school. But she goes to the library and she's about to leave with her books when she runs into Ted Roberts. It's kind of creeping me out how often he happens to run into her. First, when she just got back to the school, now when she's making a random stop at the library. But anyway, Ted has a new friend he introduces to Jean, Cal Rankin. She immediately recognizes him as the Mimic, and Rankin asks if they've met before because she looks familiar. But Jean lies and says that there's no way because she transferred from a small private school and she'd remember him if he went there. And remember, Xavier erased the Mimic's memory of the X-Men during their last encounter. But some of Rankin's old temper crops back up, and he looks angrily at Jean and thinks to himself, "I know I've seen her before, and I won't rest until I remember where." Jean then schedules a date with Ted before leaving, fully unaware of Rankin's thoughts, and I guess not even looking at his expression. He looks terrifying. Jean arrives back at the X-Mansion a little while later and delivers the books to Xavier. She greets the team and looks around wondering where Scott is, but she doesn't ask. Xavier takes a moment to mansplain how to use the index of a book before revealing what he learns about the pendant that Juan Moroz found. He says that it grants the wearer the power of Kukulkan, but in the past, when it was used, it led to a holocaust of violent upheaval and the eruption of a volcano that buried a Mayan city in lava. Xavier decides that the team needs to travel to San Rico and stop Kukulkan from causing the same type of destruction again. As the team gets ready to go, Iceman asks if Cyclops will be okay enough to go with them. This leads Jean to panic a little bit, and she asks if Scott is okay, and Warren jealously answers that Scott's a big boy now. Scott walks in just then and says that fortunately he's got some immunity to his own powers, so he's recovered from the museum incident. So he and the X-Men leave Jean behind and travel to San Rico in their jet. On the way, Scott thinks to himself about Jean, because of course he does, and her concern about his well-being leads him to believe that she has feelings for him as well, and no matter his fears about his powers, he has to tell her how he feels when they get back. The X-Men arrive in the jungle of San Rico to search out Kukulkan. Xavier stays behind in a house beside a large river, and as the team is leaving, he warns them about the dangers that dissension can cause if there's any among the team, due to Warren and Scott's feelings about Jean, presumably. Then the group travels through the jungle where they're attacked by a jaguar and then a group of caiman before falling into a booby trap and nearly getting speared by a group of local tribesmen. Scott is able to tunnel them out of the trap and they reach the pyramids. Kukulkan has been busy since he first arrived. First, he cleared away all the jungle covering the city and the pyramids, and then placed the residents of San Rico under his mental control. So the tribesmen that trapped the team and also the local police are under his control, and the police are patrolling the pyramids. Kukulkan has also increased the pendant's power by uncovering a giant statue of a snake topped with a large crystal. And it's basically a giant solar panel for the pendant. Once they spot Kukulkan, the X-Men go on the attack, but they struggle in the fight against Kukulkan's powers. Beast and Iceman, though, spot the snake crystal statue and realize it's Kukulkan's power source. So Beast, Angel, and Cyclops attack Kukulkan again, while Iceman covers the crystal in a large sheet of ice. However, things go sideways when Cyclops fires his optic beam at Kukulkan, but his enemy dodges at the last second and Angel ends up getting hit with the full blast and falls to the ground. When Cyclops goes to help Angel, Kukulkan hits him with his own powers and he's knocked out as well. Kukulkan spots Iceman covering the crystal, but the sheet of ice has already done its job. When Kukulkan goes to fire his powers again, they sputter out. But it seems Kukulkan's sense of self-preservation is not the strongest. He then, for some strange reason, fires his powers at the base of the statue, causing a giant tremor that starts shaking it and it's wobbling. The snake statue then starts to crumble and topples into a hole in the ground, which quickly seals up behind it. So now the crystal is gone. Beast and Iceman go after Kukulkan, who runs away, but find that he's now transformed back into regular old Juan Meroz. With the power source of the pendant destroyed, all of his powers have disappeared as well. So they tie him up, take the pendant from him, and then go check on Cyclops and Angel. Cyclops has recovered and is just getting back up as Iceman and Beast walk over. But Angel then regains consciousness as well, and when he sees Cyclops, he starts accusing him of intentionally attacking him. Cyclops is shocked and asks why Angel would say that. Angel responds that he did it because they both love Marvel Girl, and then he falls unconscious again. Cyclops carries the unconscious Angel as the team leaves the area. Beast and Iceman both have really grim looks on their faces, and neither of them defend Cyclops against Angel's accusations. And in the last panel, Cyclops wonders to himself if he did subconsciously try to eliminate a rival. And that ends the story. It's definitely becoming a trend to end issues on a dark note, either cliffhangers or drama on the team, like Jean leaving, and then now the team on the outs over Scott and Warren's crushes on Jean. And so now we have to wait to see what will happen to Scott's pledge early in the issue to finally reveal his feelings to Jean. Of course, their leader, Professor Xavier, did recognize that there was conflict on the team when he warned them about dissension. On one hand, I guess he gives them the chance to work out their issues on their own, but then he's also seeing this conflict, like, bubble up as the team is setting off to risk their lives together to take on Kukulkan. And let's be honest, he's fully reading their minds a lot of the time, so he has to know that this love triangle is getting messier and messier. I don't know how long the flight from New York to San Rico was, but I am sure it was long enough for the telepath to help these two teenage boys work through their girl problems before it got to this point. And this also isn't the first time that Cyclops has harmed Angel with his powers. When they faced off against Lucifer last, Scott intentionally hit Angel with his optic beams to save the mission. This time against Kukulkan was accidental, but still, Angel's pretty hurt, and I'd be pissed if it happened a second time as well. So despite their victory, the X-Men return home in a worse place than when they left, to fight a god. Next time, in addition to their interpersonal drama, the X-Men will have to deal with Calvin Rankin making another appearance. Just like with the Blob, Xavier's mind erasing doesn't last permanently, so we've got another villain with a grudge against the team. Until then, don't forget to check out the episodes of Grey Malkin Lane and Marvel Plus that I mentioned at the beginning of the episode. They're both great podcasts, so go give them a listen if you haven't already, and listen to their other episodes as well. I will post pictures from the two issues I covered today on the podcast Instagram at X-Men Unraveled. That's also where I post any updates between episodes, so if you want to keep up with those, that is where you'll find them. That is it for today. Thank you for listening. I will talk to you next time, and remember not to steal any mysterious ancient objects.